This is Rainmaker FM, the digital marketing podcast network. It's built on the Rainmaker platform, which empowers you to build your own digital marketing and sales platform. Start your free 14-day trial at rainmakerplatform.com. Welcome to The Showrunner, where we have one goal: teach you how to develop, launch, and run a remarkable show. Ready? And welcome to episode number 24 of The Showrunner. I am your host, Jared Morris, VP of Rainmaker FM. And I am joined as... wait, not as always. I can't say that anymore, because I am not joined on this episode by Johnny Naster, host of Hack the Entrepreneur and Defender of Humanity, because Johnny is not here. He is with his family, traveling back home. And I told him to focus on the trip home, get there safely, and that I would handle this week's episode of The Showrunner. So Johnny's not here. We have no one to defend humanity, but I will do my best in his absence. But we do have a special guest today for our main topic. Toby Lyles joined me, was kind enough to give us some time from 24 Sound. He also does all of the editing for Rainmaker FM, and he is here to provide some really, really useful tips on how to work with an editor and then how to get better audio yourself. And so that's coming up in our main topic. As for me, since it's just me recording, I decided to use this opportunity to head back into my closet. And so I'm sitting here on the ground with my H6 talking in the closet. Maybe I'm feeling a little bit self-conscious since I know Toby is going to be editing this and we just talked about audio quality and I know I get a little bit better sound in here, so I decided to do this. And it's just kind of for old time's sake, because this is how we started doing The Showrunner, and so decided that I would do this again. But to begin, I just want to share a really quick story with you, because something really cool happened today. And I don't know, I don't feel like I can share this with everybody, but I feel like I can share it with you, because I feel like you'll get it. So, you know, I host The Showrunner, obviously. I also host The Lead on Rainmaker FM. On the side, for fun, I also host podcasts. So I host Primality Primer, which is a daily show every weekday. It's about a 9-10 minute show talking about the importance and the benefits of balancing pride and humility. Then I host two shows about Indiana basketball, Podcast on the Brink and The Assembly Call. One is a traditional show, The Podcast on the Brink, interviews and such. The other one, The Assembly Call, is a post-game show that goes live after every Indiana basketball game. Well, I had this really weird, awesome convergence of worlds over the last couple of days. So, you know, The Assembly Call was the first show that I ever did about Indiana basketball. It was my foray into creating content about Indiana basketball. And because I did that show, it led to the opportunity to host Podcast on the Brink, which is the podcast for InsideTheHole.com, which is the biggest, I believe, independent Indiana basketball site out there. Alex Bozich runs it, does a great job, and I really appreciate the opportunity he's given me to host his podcast, which I do, and we've talked about this on a previous episode of The Showrunner, basically as a form of guest posting. He's got the much bigger audience. I'm able to get myself, my presence, my voice in front of his audience. And through that, people have become aware of The Assembly Call, and it's helped build our audience. So I love doing it, but there's also strategy involved, audience building strategy. And this past week, we were able to interview for Podcast on the Brink, Cody Zeller. Now, I don't imagine that you'll know who Cody Zeller is unless you're a Big Ten basketball fan or a Charlotte Hornets fan, but he is one of the best players in Indiana basketball history, certainly one of the best players in the last 20 years, and it was a really cool opportunity for us. Certainly the biggest name guest I've ever had a chance to interview, the biggest name guest we've had on Podcast on the Brink, and it was just a really cool opportunity. And I get the absurdity of a 34-year-old being excited about interviewing a 24-year-old just because he plays basketball. I don't expect you to get that, but I was excited. I am excited. It was a cool thing, and Cody was a great guest and provided some really candid answers to questions I wasn't sure that he would provide. So it was a really cool experience. So that is one. But then I was inside the forum at Inside the Hall. There was a thread about the podcast, and I was interested to see what people would say about it. And one of the people in the forum said, I really enjoyed listening to the interview with Cody. He really sounds like a great example of primility. It sounds like he takes a lot of pride in his Indiana experience and his skills and his achievements, and yet he's so humble, and that comes across so clearly in what he's saying. And I just, you know how when you put an idea out there and yeah, you expect that people will comment on it and maybe they'll tweet about it, but to kind of see it out there in the wild, so to speak, and the crossover of seeing the ideas I've been talking about on primility, to see it in an Indiana basketball forum, and to see that crossover and just the convergence of worlds, and how starting the assembly call led me to Podcast on the Brink, led to this really memorable experience of interviewing this great player in IU history, and then how that led to the connection that someone totally random who I've never met made with primility content was unbelievable. And I don't feel like I can explain that to a lot of people, like they'd get it, but I feel like you will, as a fellow content creator, as a fellow showrunner, how unexpectedly cool that was. And it made me think about how often I've thought about quitting the assembly call, how often I've thought about quitting doing Podcast on the Brink, frankly, and how often, even just through the 37 straight weekdays of doing Primility Primer episodes, at least as of me recording this episode of The Showrunner, how often I've already thought about stopping that, and yet I continue going. And what keeps me going and what keeps my passion and my enthusiasm for those shows, for The Showrunner, for The Lead, are those moments where an idea connects with an audience. Well, those moments where you get to have an experience like interviewing a guy that you watched play for a couple years and cheered for, that was really cool. But then also those moments where an idea has connected with an audience and it started to spread organically, it was awesome. It was really, really cool. And 4 years of work on the assembly call and the episodes that I've hosted of Podcast on the Brink and the 6 years that primility.com has been up and I haven't known what to do with it and it's led to this daily show, all of that, it's totally worth it. The work to put in, just that intrinsic value, that intrinsic profitability, how great I feel. I just wanted to explain that because, again, I think you'll get it. And I think every now and then we need to be reminded of what might be right around the corner. And so if you're struggling with a show, if you're struggling with your motivation, if you feel like you're at one of those dip moments, keep going. I'm telling you, because I've been there and I've kept going and I have never regretted continuing to go, and something good has always come right around the corner. And if you have any questions about that, if you're dealing with a moment like that and you're not sure if it's time to quit, keep going, I say, number one, you know, trust your gut, but lean towards the side of going. And if you ever have a question about it, email me, jared@copyblogger.com, because I've been there, I understand, so has Johnny, and we're here for you. That's what we do on The Showrunner. So thank you for indulging me in that story. If you have any stories like that also, go comment on The Showrunner page. I'm sure everybody would love to see it. You can email those to me too, because I love sharing those stories, because that's what keeps us going, and that's what fuels our showrunning fire. So anyway, with that said, let's get to today's main topic. And again, today's main topic is about editing and creating better audio, working with your editor if you have one, what to look for in an editor if you're at that point, and just some simple tips to give you better audio. And here to join me for that is Toby Lyles of 24 Sound, who also does the editing for Rainmaker FM. And here's my conversation now with Toby. All right. Well, we are joined now on this episode of The Showrunner by guest co-host Toby Lyles of 24 Sound. Toby, how are you?
I'm good. Thanks for having me on.
No, for sure. Thanks for being here. It's a pleasure to talk with you. So, okay, my first question for you before we dig into the nuts and bolts here of audio, the name 24 Sound, what was the genesis of that name and why spelling it out instead of the numbers? I've always been curious about that.
I'm crazy.
Best answer ever.
There actually is a little bit of meaning. 24 is, and it's totally nerdy, but you know, when I wanted something that's the best, right? And so there's a whole bunch of different bit rates, and at the time, 24 bits was like the highest bit rate you can go. And nobody was even doing it because it was like this weird, esoteric, like awesome audio thing. So there you go. And as far as spelling it out, I just thought it was cool. I wish there was a better... It's terrible for a website, though, because then you have to spell it out and not write it. So I'm not sure what I thought about then, but it seemed great at the time.
I like it, though, but it's different. You know, we often talk about being different, being unique, and it made it stand out, because at first I thought it was the numerals, and then I realized it was written out. So I've always remembered it. So good. That's good.
Good. Well, yeah. Something worked there.
Okay, so now, since it's just you and I talking and no one is listening here, for anybody who... Well, anyway... I think most people know that you do a lot of the editing. Your company does a lot of the editing for Rainmaker FM. So yeah. I'm just curious, which show is the most difficult to edit? Again, no one's listening, so this is just us speaking privately.
The most difficult show to edit.
It's Damien's, isn't it?
His is kind of fun because he puts all the music in the background. But yeah. I will say that... A hit publish, I've been noticing. That takes a long time, but it is pretty darn cool. And so
yeah,
it might get the difficult award simply because Amy is doing a killer job. She's really creative. And then we put all these sounds and behind it. And here's what's difficult about it is you don't just throw anything underneath. You're trying to capture a mood or a feeling or a joke, right? Mm-hmm. So it's got to be just the right thing and just the right timing. And so I'll just futz with it for a long time.
Yeah.
It's fun.
Well, and I guess that is a good, I mean, I kind of asked that as a joke, but I suppose it is a good jumping off point from one of the questions I wanted to ask you anyway, which is about how to work with an editor. Because, you know, a lot of our listeners, they either are at the point or hope to someday be at the point where they're outsourcing a lot of the production. You know, they're obviously doing, you know, talking behind the mic and doing the interviews and doing all that, but they eventually want to outsource the production. So, you know, for a show like that, or really just for any show, what are some tips for working with an editor to make, you know, if you have a format that's difficult or something very specific that you want, what's the best way to make it more efficient on you and to get the most out of the relationship with the editor?
I feel like a good relationship with an editor is a good business relationship, which comes down to relationship in general in my book. So at the start of it, yes, you have to be, you know, clear guidelines. Yes, you have to, you know, have your contracts in place and whatnot. But relationship, and you just have to like the person. You have to communicate well. Amy's a great example. You know, I kind of get what she's going for. And so you can kind of work back and forth. I work back and forth with her on, like, I understand where she's going. And if people don't understand, you know, if your editor doesn't get your show or get the vibe you're going for, this kind of like higher level of, I want my show to feel like this, then it's not going to work out very well. They can't just push buttons. They need to understand human stuff.
That's a great answer. And, you know, we've talked on here, you know, I've made mention a few times on the Showrunner that it's been very hard for me to relinquish editing. And you and I have talked about this before too, because I was doing all of the editing for the Showrunner. And there's a part of that that I love doing because I love feeling connected with the whole process. There's no way for me to not feel a little bit of a disconnect when I hand off the editing. Now, what's great about someone like you is, you know, we've talked about the Showrunner, you know, we've kind of settled on this format. You understand what we're going for very well, which, you know, you sent us an email, the last episode or the episode before, you know, you said something like, you know, how it, you know, you helped make it so it really felt behind the scenes, which you totally get what we're going for because that's exactly what we're going for. And yet I've really struggled, you know, to hand that off. Do you find that that's common with people that, you know, you get certain showrunners, certain podcasters that have a real hard time, you know, once you get it, right? Like you're a professional, you get it. Do you have a hard time with people not micromanaging you and wanting to say, look, dude, I get it. I know what you're going for. Give me the audio and let me do my thing.
Well,
this is your chance to admonish me publicly if you want to, is what I'm saying.
No, honestly, you've done a great job at it. And it is hard, especially when you've done it before. You're in it, and yeah, there is a connection. There's that side of it where you're just listening, and yeah, you're going for a feel, and you're you want to connect with your audience. And one part of connecting with an audience is the communication that's happening like right now. And the second part is how you put that together and what you choose to delete. And it feels like, oh, you should just delete some or whatever, but it's this higher level of communication. And so you don't want to mess that up. You want to treat your people right. So it's hard to let go. And yeah, I mean, some people kind of want to micromanage, and that's completely reasonable. And to be honest, you can micromanage all you want. We'll still do a good job, and we'll take your notes into consideration, and we'll do that as far as, you know, what we do here. And that's another good point of any editing company is they will take your notes. And so it's a relationship. So if you have a way that you want to go, or you want to delete this thing or that thing, or you want this to sound like that, or you're just concerned about it, they will hear you and say, oh, I hear you. I understand what you're saying. You're concerned about that section, and I'm going to address it in the way that you have thought about. And they won't say, oh, well, I'll just do whatever I feel like because I'm awesome. I'm an audio guy or girl.
Yeah. Let me ask you this. I mean, I think editing, like any other service, you know, you're going to get what you pay for to a certain extent, and it's going to vary from person to person. And I know there are a lot of people out there that are overpromising, under-delivering, because I've talked with the showrunners who are dealing with that. Do you have any tips for people who are out there looking for an editor for what to look for to make sure that they find someone that will do a good job, that will do what they say, and that so that the showrunners will be getting the value for their money that they're going to be investing?
That's a good point, and you're right. I meet them all the time. There's just a bunch of people out there who who learned on YouTube or whatever, and now they're doing podcast editing, and it is important to be aware of that and understand that audio and podcast editing is not just something that your brother-in-law's uncle or whatever can do. You know, you just find a friend who can do it. You actually need somebody who knows what they're doing. Audio is a science and it's complex. And so the first thing you need to, besides a relationship, you need to find somebody with experience. And that means like they were in the pro audio industry. They did sound for this famous person and that famous person. And they did this record and they did that record. I mean, just because they went to school doesn't mean anything. Like audio school, it's great, but you have to have experience in the field. And so most people that I've found that are successful in this business were successful outside of this business. And now they're just helping people inside this business.
And by business, you mean specifically the podcast editing
podcast
business.
Editing, yeah. So when you're looking for a podcast editor, you probably want to find somebody who's been successful outside of podcast editing first.
Yeah. No, that makes total sense. Total sense. So, okay. So that's some really good insight for people who are looking to take that step of hiring an editor and looking to outsource this. And again, some people are there, some people aren't. Let's help out a little bit the people who aren't quite there yet. And I want to ask you, is there one audio mistake you see, or I guess more appropriately that you hear podcasters make more than any other, like one that sticks out, that's just the most common one that we can provide some advice on?
Yeah. So the most often neglected thing in podcasting is the initial equipment. For some reason, people want to grab whatever microphone that plugs in via USB and put it in a glass room that sounds like a cathedral, or like they're recording in their, you know, mom's basement, and use that as their professional outreach. And so, yes, the beauty of podcasting is that anybody can do it. And yes, it's nice to have that inside touch. And sometimes that is exactly what you need for your message. But I would say most people with most messages overlook this fact and spend $100 to $200 too little, or the same amount of money just on the wrong gear. And it sounds bad. So they won't take the time to make it sound good first.
Yeah, this is interesting because, I mean, a lot of times on the show, you know, we've told people not to fuss too much on the equipment right off the bat, you know, not to overanalyze to get something out there. Give me, or give the audience, obviously, what's the minimum? Like, what would be the minimum setup that would be adequate, you know, in terms of equipment? You don't need to necessarily name a specific mic, but just in terms of the type of equipment and a general budget that you think people should be willing to spend to get going.
Yeah, so at minimum, you're going to spend, you know, $70 to $80. And that's only because there's the, I will say equipment if I'm allowed to. There's the,
go ahead.
Audio Technica makes that AT2100. And it's not the most amazing thing, but it's a dynamic microphone. And that's the most important part of it, because the condenser microphones just pick up room sound and that those reflections. And so it sounds like that. And your voice might sound good on it, but everything else sounds good on it. And you don't want all those other sounds in there. So a dynamic is a little bit more of a reduced sound, and they're not as sensitive to outside noises. I'll say that. Mm-hmm. So that one's pretty good. Or Shure makes it the Shure SM58. This is a classic rock and roll microphone that's been used. It's the mic, and that microphone with something like a little audio interface, $200 for like a Focusrite Scarlett or something like that, can sound really good.
What is a Focusrite Scarlett?
It's just a box that you're going to plug into your computer. You plug your mic in one side and then USB to the other side. One of the most often misunderstood things is people will grab a microphone with a USB output and plug that in. And yes, that does work, but in audio, there's a whole bunch of audio work, I guess you would say. There's a lot of important functions happen between the microphone and that output. It needs to be converted from a low-level signal and boosted up to a high-level signal, and then it needs to be converted from an audio to a digital conversion, and all of that stuff is really important. And so when it's a USB output, then there's usually somebody went really cheap on that stuff to fit all that into one microphone. So when you separate it out and you have a microphone that goes into a box that plugs into your computer, it's going to be a lot higher quality.
So basically what you're saying is that I need to upgrade my setup.
We did talk about that.
We did.
I think you're a good example of, I mean, because you're right. You do need to just get started. The most important stuff isn't the technical thing. It's not, I mean, don't worry about the gear. You know, use what you can use and get going. Get started. Get some traction. But close behind that is care about how it sounds. So there's kind of this balance of get going, but and your message is the most important thing. So you need to get it out. And then on the other side of, well, you've got to sound good and professional. And, you know, I could talk for quite a while about how your microphone transmits your voice. And so if you go on the cheap or if you don't do it right, then it doesn't sound right. And so then people don't understand you because you have this rich voice and you have a unique personality and that's transmitted through your voice. And how is that going to get through when you got some junky microphone that's got hiss all over the place and just doesn't sound
okay,
right?
Okay, so level with me here. How much, obviously we've been very upfront on the Showrunner. You know, I've talked about audio struggles that I've had and the different setups that I've tried and all of that. So when I send you the audio files, how much work do you have to do on my track to get it to sound good?
All day. It's been at least.
Dang it.
No. Well, and that's the other thing. That's why it's so important to start with your microphone, because it kind of starts and ends. I mean, you can make, and I'm not saying you're bad, but I'm saying that's, you can only do so much. So I can only spend so much time, and then it's what it is. So, no, I don't spend a lot of time. We have, you know, you and I have worked on your sound and you've liked it and we've agreed on it. And so I just have settings. I've got the Jared setting that I pull up and I double check it as we're listening and make sure everything sounds good, but it's just a button at this point.
So do you have just like a Johnny setting and a Damien setting and a Brian setting? Like, is that standard? You just have a setting for each individual voice and setup?
Definitely. Yeah. Yeah. So it comes through and I'll, you know, if it's a first time client, I'll sit down with it for a while and just listen and play around with it and just try to get something that works. And I'll usually vamp on that for the next, you know, two or three times, just trying to make sure that something sounds good. Because again, it's important. This is your message. This is your voice. So it needs to sound natural. It needs to communicate the way it's supposed to.
Yeah. Okay. So let's say, so someone's got the right microphone. What about mic technique? You know, because this is something that's obviously important and that doesn't get talked about too much. But I know, I mean, there are some specific things you can do, how you talk into the mic, where you position the microphone. I'm not even sure that I do this right. So I'm really curious to hear your thoughts on it. But what are some general thoughts about mic technique?
There's actually a little bit to mic technique, like you said. For podcasting, you can keep it very simple and just say, get yourself a pop filter, which is probably another one of those things that we miss a lot. But get a pop filter, put it right in front of your microphone within a couple inches away, and then talk right into that pop filter consistently. So in this case, you would say, so your voice is consistent. A pop filter right up on the microphone is going to be one of the best ways that you can keep yourself consistent, keep the pops out of the microphone, and that's your mic technique. As you get more advanced, you might learn a little bit how different you can convey different emotions by, it's more of an acting thing probably, but if you're going to act a little bit, you can work with the microphone and get real, you know, get real close and be intimate, or get far away, or, you know, just,
yeah.
I mean, you can do that, but more than likely, if you're doing something like this, just keep your voice consistent. Hmm.
Or if you want to sound like you're in a cave, lean back like this.
Well, but that works sometimes. Like, what if you're laughing, yeah, right? What if this is just a really fun time and everybody, you know, like backing up off the microphone, even mm-hmm. though that's typically a bad sound, sometimes that's exactly what you need.
Yeah.
For whatever you're doing.
Well, but you're right. But I mean, it is a performance in some senses. And, you know, your voice is what's doing the work. And so how you present that voice. And there are going to be differences, how close you are to the mic. And yeah, I mean, that's great. I hadn't thought about it in those terms. But I think that's a great thing for people to remember. Because we've talked so much about how what makes podcasting so special is the ability to create that emotional, that authentic connection. And you're using your voice and those different strategies and techniques. And that's the kind of thing you can just practice. I mean, I do that sometimes. I'll come in here and record and just practice with the mic in different places and, you know, trying different things just to see what sounds better. And, you know, I have my own little peculiar setup, but I've made it work as best I can. I'm in the process of getting ready to invest some more money in it and do some more with it. But, you know, you got to kind of practice and hear what sounds best. And I think that's a great tip. Anything else? Any other general audio tips that we've missed that you think, you know, maybe even for beginners? I mean, let's back it up all the way. We've kind of gone in reverse here, you know, from people who might be looking to outsource their editing, you know, to kind of the intermediate. Anything even just from the very beginning? Any other fundamental tips that you can give people that will improve their audio, that will make a difference?
I like what you said about practicing. That's a really good point. And that's probably what you want to do to start out with. And as far as beginning, I'm not, there's probably a lot of things you could do audio-wise in the beginning, but I would just say care. Care about it. Think about it. Realize at the beginning of this interview, you know, you stopped and you checked and you made sure you were recording and you did all of those things because you're a pro, you know, you're experienced at this. Not everybody does that. And so just consider it a valuable thing and listen, you know, like record and then listen to your recording and send it to some friends because you're going to hate your voice anyways. And, yeah, you know, ask your wife or your whoever, does this sound like me? Is this, is this the message I want to get out? You know, just think about it.
Yeah. That's great. Now, Toby, this has been great. I appreciate all the insight. And if people want to connect with you more, obviously 24sound.com, everything spelled out. Do you have time for social media? Is there a good social media spot for people to connect with you?
I'm terrible at social media. It's not time. It's just I'm terrible at it. I do a little bit on Twitter, and I think it is 24 Sound spelled out, if I remember right, on Twitter.
24 sound.
Yeah. Just connect with us on the website. You know, if I always say anything we can do for any of the showrunner folks, you know, we'll do. So shoot me an email or shoot you, Jared, an email and you'll pass it on to me or whatever works. And I will, I like helping folks out. So if I can help people, that's our goal. Our goal is to help people out with their podcast. So
yep,
we'll do whatever we can.
Well, perfect. Well, thank you, Toby. And now we can hit stop on this and I send it right over to you.
Then I have to listen to my voice.
Right. Now, that's part of this. I'm going to make you listen to your own voice here for 20 minutes while editing it.
Oh, man.
Well, cool. Well, thanks, Toby. And it's time for a listener question.
Thanks, Jared.
All right, well, our listener question for this episode of The Showrunner is sponsored by Rainmaker Digital. You may be thinking, wait a minute, Rainmaker Digital? I thought it was Rainmaker Platform. And it is Rainmaker Platform, and you may not know yet what Rainmaker Digital is because it just happened. Copyblogger Media has rebranded. It is now named Rainmaker Digital, and I wanted to bring that to your attention because as a proud member of the Copyblogger, now Rainmaker Digital team, it's been a very exciting week for us. We're all very excited about this change. And if you want to know more about it, you can go to copyblogger.com/rainmaker-digital. And that's the post that Brian Clark wrote about the change on Copyblogger. And you can also go to rainmakerdigital.com, check out the site, see what it means. But you will start hearing us now referring a lot to Rainmaker Digital as opposed to Copyblogger Media. And it's a change that makes sense. It's a change that we're all very excited about. And I just wanted to share that with you because by extension, you're part of the Rainmaker Digital family as someone who listens to The Showrunner, which is obviously an important part of the Rainmaker Digital content tree. So Rainmaker Digital, that's the new name for the company. And our listener question today comes from Jeff Leo Herman, a Showrunner listener. And Jeff says, so just had a listener question pop into my head. How much should we rely on curation versus pure original thinking for our podcast? I assume as long as there is very good and explicit sourcing and it's blended with other ideas, concepts, then it's okay. If not, I would love to know that too. That's a great question. And I've seen more and more people starting to do these curated podcasts. So when we talk about a curated show, you know, think about a curated post, right? When you have a curated post, a lot of times people are rounding up links and ideas that are not theirs, but they're putting them together under a certain umbrella, taking a certain topic and finding 5 or 10, relevant takes on that topic, or they are curating 10 news stories for the day. Think of Dave Pell's Next Draft, you know, think of Brian Clark's Further. So I think people really get the idea of a curated blog post or curated newsletter, but what about a curated podcast? And we've started to see some people do this. I know Jason Hobbs is a guy that I've seen do this. And now Jeff is asking about this. And I think it's a great idea. And if you want to hear an example, go back to the very first episode of The Showrunner, Why Right Now is the Perfect Time to Start a Podcast. My whole idea with that show was to curate episodes of the new Rainmaker podcast that Brian Clark and Robert Bruce had done, talking about the power of podcasting and why then Copyblogger Media, now Rainmaker Digital, while we were making such a big bet on podcasting. And it takes snippets from interviews with Jay Baer and Michael Hyatt and then discussions between Brian and Robert. And then I serve the function of the narrator, basically providing the thread that moves the episode along. And I love doing that episode. And we still get lots of really great comments about that episode. And I think it is definitely a viable strategy for your show. Now, it's difficult. It's not easy to do. Obviously, there's a lot of listening and editing and just curating involved, but I think it can be very effective. And so, you know, to Jeff's question, how much should we rely on curation versus pure original thinking? Well, it depends. Is your differentiator going to be that every episode is curated? You know, maybe you're taking a specific news topic and curating little clips of podcasts from around the podcastosphere, if we can use that term. Or maybe you're taking a specific topic, right? Like maybe you're doing marketing, and so you're going to curate different episodes of Rainmaker FM. If that's your differentiator and that's what your audience expects, then you may have to invest all your time in doing that. I think probably a good way to get started with that, if it's something that you've been thinking about it, is do an episode. Maybe make it a bonus episode, or maybe just slip it into your normal feed as kind of a surprise to folks and see how they respond to it. See what the demand is for it in your particular niche. So I think in terms of how much should you rely on it, that is totally dependent on your goals and your audience. What I think is very important is to get permission, right? I think you don't want to just start curating and taking clips, even if you say, well, you know, fair use will protect me and I can do this and I'm so far off the radar screen, no one will care. That's probably not a great strategy to use. But I bet you most showrunners, I know if someone came to me and said, hey, I want to use a clip of the showrunner for my show. Great, take it. You know, don't use the whole thing. Don't just republish an episode as your own, obviously, although a lot harder to do with a podcast considering people recognize your voices. But you know what I mean. I mean, give the content creator the courtesy of asking their permission. But I love it as a strategy, and I would like to do more of it, frankly. And so I'm hoping that I will get the opportunity to do more on future shows. But yeah, I think it's a really good idea. And if you have that, if you know of some great examples of this being done, send it to me because I'd love to see it. So great question, Jeff. I say go for it. And then share your experience. Let us know how it goes, because I think this is something we're going to start to see more and more of, because it's a great way to provide really useful content. And that is one way that you can provide value as a content creator, is not just creating net new ideas or putting out a new blog post or a new episode, but you basically provide the value by listening to a bunch of shows, curating important points from them, and then bringing that to an audience in an easily digestible version. There's value there. It's a good audience attraction strategy. I like it. So that was our listener question. Let's move along now to this week's podcast recommendation. And this week's podcast recommendation comes from Kevin Carlson, a member of the Showrunner Podcasting Course, and he is recommending his show, Stories from the Teaching Life with Penny Kittle. And Kevin has a really interesting model. I'm going to let him tell you about it. But he's basically got a growing network of podcasts for teachers and by teachers. It's really interesting. And Kevin he's the one speaking in this recommendation you're about to hear. He does a great job with it. And I love the music that's used on this particular show, Stories from the Teaching Life. And it's such a great match, too, with Kevin's narration style, which you're about to hear. And I can't. Okay, wait a minute. I don't want to. All right, listen to this and then tell me if it reminds you of a movie. All right, I don't want to say the movie because it might spoil it and cloud how you listen. But listen to this and obviously listen, you know, to what Kevin is saying and give his show a try. But I love the music, and tell me if it reminds you of any particular movie.
Hi, I'm Kevin Carlson, and my podcast recommendation for you is Stories from the Teaching Life with Penny Kittle. It's one of the three shows on the Teacher Learning Sessions podcast network. Penny Kittle is an internationally recognized author in the education field, and she's written several award-winning books. She teaches writing in English and travels the world working with teachers as an educational consultant. The reason I want to recommend this podcast is because these are great stories, first and foremost. They're stories about love and courage and hope and transformation, and yes, teaching, too. The Teacher Learning Sessions tagline is connecting teachers with ideas, experts, and each other. But you don't have to be a teacher to enjoy stories from the teaching life. You just have to enjoy stories and appreciate the joy, the beauty, and the wisdom found in a life's work well spent. Please check out the podcast, subscribe, leave a review, and enjoy listening to Stories from the Teaching Life with Penny Kittle.
All right, anything coming to mind? All right, every time I listen, I've listened to several episodes of the show and listened to this, I can't stop thinking about The Princess Bride. Doesn't it sound like The Princess Bride music, that tone? I don't know. Maybe that's just me. It was one of my favorite movies growing up. But every time I listen to that in combination with Kevin's narration, it just reminds me of The Princess Bride. But yeah, go check out Kevin's show. He's doing a great job. Just really, really proud of him as someone who came into the course, has really internalized, you know, what we've been teaching, what we've been saying, and now has his show out there, and it's getting a great response, doing really well and new and noteworthy. So congratulations, Kevin, and hopefully a lot of people listen to your show. Well, with that said, we are now at the end of episode 24 of The Showrunner. I hope it's been okay with me going it alone. Thank you to Toby Lyles for joining me for the main portion so that you had more to listen to than just my voice. And I will simply close by reminding you to go to showrunner.fm. And if you are not already, get on our email list. If you are new, you will immediately start receiving our content series, The Four Essential Elements of a Remarkable Audience Experience, a remarkable podcast, even though they're kind of one and the same. But it'll walk you through our core curriculum, you know, what we feel are the pillars of creating a remarkable audience experience, which is what we're trying to teach you and inspire you to do here on The Showrunner. So go there, showrunner.fm, get on the list, and then join us next Wednesday for another brand new episode of The Showrunner. Johnny will be back to defend humanity and to prevent you from having to listen to so much of me. But I do appreciate you being here. I appreciate you listening. Keep going, and we'll talk to you on next week's episode of The Showrunner.